My aunt's little ones are doing a 9-week course. And I mean, I know they're really olic and stuff, but I just think it's kind of cruel. Because when she says sit, they sit. When she says come, they come. And now, she's teaching them tricks, like party tricks and stuff. I mean, it's exploitation. Come on, I mean, the poor dogs.
The combination meal is 5x7 colors. There's something for everyone. Nando's, fire it up.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes. Good morning, everybody. What's happening?
The news.
The news. So see, you are so dramatic. Every time I walk past you, you go, I was walking into the studio. He was walking out.
Don't make it sound
went,
so simple.
No, see, that's what you do.
Don't make it sound so simple.
That's what you do.
Which you cannot see through,
yeah,
obviously.
But this isn't a house of horrors.
I did not know there was someone behind the door.
If it is, yeah, it's not Jack the Ripper. It's either
house
Gareth
of,
or
house
me.
House of horrors.
It kind of is. Because all I see in my line of vision is like a torso.
Okay.
Like, what is this?
When last did you open a door here and there was a knife wielding madman on the other side?
It was the first time for everything, Ben. And I just don't want to not be prepared.
When your glass is half shattered, I guess you're right. It's always a first time for a disaster.
No, I feel like you two are being harsh on Sia. We all know that Sia goes through at least 100 possible ways of him dying every single day of his life.
That's right.
Thank you. It's pretty simple in my books.
So I had whatever Ben had yesterday, and I felt shockingly shit. I got home after...
shit is spot on, actually.
Yeah. Had a really good lunch at Kolkakio's, but I couldn't even eat, and it's my favorite food. I couldn't even eat too much of it. And then we left there, and I went home, and I just felt, horrendous.
Oh, no. Oh.
I felt, it was almost like flu symptoms, so it wasn't just a stomach thing. Is that what you felt?
I had that, fever symptoms, aching body.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
We're getting like those horrible old people who only talk about their ailments.
No, that sounds like that listeriosis that's
been
going around.
Oh, my God.
Stop it right
now. I didn't even think about that.
In extreme cases, because remember last week I was telling you about how there was an outbreak in Gauteng, according to the health department.
Oh, great. I didn't think about that. I've got listeriosis.
And in extreme cases, people have died.
Oh, my God.
So the symptoms of feeling weak... diarrhea, vomiting.
So much to look forward to in life. Yeah. Are you okay now?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm operating at about 85%, which is perfect. I manage that.
Well,
85% is good. Some people operate at 60% every day.
What happens to you though, because you are Mr. Concrete Stomach Man?
Yeah, I didn't eat anything at all yesterday. So I haven't eaten anything. I didn't have supper. I didn't have breakfast this morning. I couldn't eat the damn thing. But that's probably better because then, you know, you give your stomach a chance for all those intestinal flora to rejig themselves, right?
Do you just feel queasy then? Because
I feel a bit weak.
But you don't vomit. You don't.
No. Yuck. Blah. Someone suggested that to me yesterday. I don't know about you and. I don't know, maybe you're one of those people who finds it easy to throw up. I can't handle that feeling. It is
beyond shit.
I would rather...
You have to sometimes do it.
No, I know. Everybody says so, but I would rather just hold it in.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Holding it in feels much, much worse.
You are the advocate for throwing up, my buddy.
No,
I don't understand.
No. I'm not the advocate for throwing... I don't stick my fingers down my throat, no. But I would rather... whatever is trying to get out, come out, than me forcing it to stay in there. Because once it's out, then you immediately start to feel better.
Oh, I can't. Even after a night out of crazy
I can't
drinking,
do it. I'm with
I'd
Sia.
Rather spend the entire afternoon.
Guys, but something is trying to come out
of
your body.
And I get, like, logically it makes sense, and you clear out the system and everything else, and it's better, and blah, blah, blah. That's why we have that ability, that mechanism. Right, it's a. You see animals doing it the whole time. It's what they do.
Yeah, Meowsers did it last night. Even like, she had like a sympathetic puke for me.
Right. Listen to this beautiful email. It's from Rusty. It says, "Hey guys, I started using Bitcoin because of your show. Not massive amounts, but I've made some profit. Mm-hmm. I started eating healthy foods because of what you guys talk about there. Lost 10 kilograms. I'm less of an asshole to my kids because of your view on fathers in South Africa, trying to teach them the way I was not. I have actual insights into politics because of your show, albeit limited. I definitely have some. Switching from terrestrial radio to Cliff Central 2 years ago was the best move for personal growth. Thank you for helping people like me who have severe social anxiety to be part of the conversations that I would otherwise not be able to have. Thank you for giving us tools to engage the world by asking questions and not accepting the status quo that we've been conditioned to. If it was not for what you guys do, it would not be as easy to hear great content and valuable input from everything, including Sex Talk, Futurology, and good old Casper. Really and truly, from the bottom of the cockles of my heart, thank you, and for your crackerjack team, peace and love, Rusty. P.S. Attached a little scribble I made while listening to the Tim Noakes interview this morning. And his scribble is, it's a cartoon with me, I suppose, in it. So you're telling me, it's like just like a drawing of me. Anyway, it's very good.
That's a nice email.
Yes, isn't that cute? Huh? Very.
That is very interesting, you know.
Just put such powerful stuff, like, you know, you often think the biggest contribution you can make, and this is certainly how I felt for radio for a number of years, is that you'll make people laugh in the traffic. And I always said that's a good enough thing to do. Mm-hmm. If I can do that, then I've made people's lives a little bit better in traffic, which is an awful place to be stuck. But when you get something like that and you hear about how this guy, and clearly it's not just me or just this team or just this show, it's, you know, all the shows and all the people that we've had in here, these amazing guests, these incredibly insightful people who we get to speak to every day. I thought about it the other day, and without getting too philosophical, mm-hmm. The greatest privilege of having the job I have is that I get to meet the most important, interesting, influential, thoughtful, powerful, logical, reasonable, creative people as a part of my daily work. And I get to sit with them for an hour. And I get to talk to them. I mean, that's a privilege beyond measure. So even if everything else were a complete disaster, for my own personal growth, and this is where I share what you're saying, Rusty. For my personal growth, the last 3.5 years of meeting people and having these conversations and not having to rush to a song or sport or news or traffic or all that crap that we used to have to do on radio makes it really special. And you do feel like every moment spent listening is worth it. It's great. Thank you. That's a terrific email. You've made my day. Isn't that nice? All right. So today, lots of things happening. First of all, you know, Kolkaki have been a supporter of ours from the very get-go. And this morning, Michael and King are going to pop in a little bit later on. Mm-hmm. They're going to be here somewhere around 7:30. I see Gord Laws has just sauntered in. Gord, I saw your wolf outfit at the Sevens. It looked fantastic.
Why do you have to use the word saunter?
Well, he sauntered in. He kind of bounces in. He's one of those people who's got an interesting gait. By the way, you know your accelerometer in your phone?
Excuse me, my what?
Your phone has an accelerometer in it. That's how it can measure where it is. How's it, Gord?
No,
yeah.
I did not know that.
A flux capacitor?
Yeah.
An accelerometer can tell you which way. That's why the phone knows when you lift it up that it must switch on and that kind of thing. So your accelerometer in your phone can actually tell who you are by the way you walk. It's one of the means of ID. You know, you got fingerprint ID, facial recognition. Someone told me the other day, and I've been doing some research, because, you know, when you tell me something like that, I'm going to go and read as much as I can about it. I can't help it. And it's a tiny little device inside your phone, this accelerometer, that can tell I'm in the possession of Gord Laws because Gord walks a certain way. This all came about, Gord, because Sia was asking why I used the word sauntered to describe the way you walked in.
Accelerometer, a device that measures proper acceleration.
Yeah.
Proper acceleration being the acceleration of a body in its own instantaneous rest frame. Girl, bye.
That's
too
right.
Too many words now. I don't know.
So you've got one in your phone. Hey, Gord.
I don't saunter. I'm just fat.
No, you saunter. You have a very happy, bouncy gait. All right. So, how are you, dude?
But if you went like, if you worked for the Ministry of Funny Walks, you could get around that pretty easily and then mimic somebody's muggle walk.
You could, but then they wouldn't know. I mean, you'd have to really observe someone to be able to replicate their walking. I mean, how many people do you know that you could replicate the walk of?
Naomi Campbell.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to observe them, I guess.
Right. That's what I expected from you.
Well, it's the truth.
Yeah, she's...
Some people confuse me and her constantly.
Your accelerometers are picking up exactly the same movements.
Okay. You use both, no doubt, using Apple devices. So it's like, hello, Naomi. Oh, come on, phone. Not again.
Oh, not this again.
Yes, there's so many people in the studio. It's bizarre.
So hang on. Tell me about the sevens from your point of view. Ben told us about how much you enjoyed.
The young Gordon over here played an integral role in making the entertaining day for all.
You looked like a Game of Thrones character. but what I loved was your caption on your picture. You, Sven Svendersen and Svetlana Svendersen
from Iceland.
So great.
Yeah, no, it was cool. I mean, the event itself is really, really well run, and it's fantastic from the perspective of sevens rugby. I'm not a huge sport guy, except for Premier League football. So it's not really the kind of thing that I would probably, you know, be sitting online waiting hours before to try and get one of the tickets, because they get snapped up in literally an hour. Mm-hmm. Saru do a brilliant event, and it's great for the city of Cape Town, and people, you know, I'd say 50% of people take their costumes pretty seriously, and that's quite, but, and it's really cool to be involved there, but people can just be a bit shitty. Like, obviously Ben's dating the prettiest girl in the world, and I was with my friend Jade McKinnon, who's a drummer, and she's also very pretty. And guys are just gross, man. Like, these middle-aged guys are like, hello, sweetheart. Come sit here, sweetheart. Oh. Hey, you look nice, huh? Oh. You look nice today, huh? Can I get a photo? Come here, sit on my lap.
When you see those guys, don't you immediately think, oh, my God, I don't ever want to be that guy?
Yeah, so badly. And you also think, like, okay, out of the 1,000 guys, okay, probably an exaggeration, but out of these dozens of guys being dickheads, and you're like, at least a few of you must have daughters.
Yeah.
Or know what a daughter is.
Yeah.
Or know what a daughter is.
Yes, and Ben just tunes people. And me and Ben hung out. Yeah, we had a couple of beers. It was actually very good fun.
You got quite a mouth on him? Who knew Ben would be so full of himself?
Outside of the show, me and Ben are nice to each other. So we had quite a cool time, and we drank a few beers. And Ben tunes people. And they come up. They're like, can I get a photo with you, sweetheart? And I suppose you can be in the photo too, Ack. And Ben's like, no. Go away. Leave now. It's like, messy. Okay.
Really, Ben, you like that, huh?
No, I find people very frustrating, Gareth.
You and Mabali. Yeah. You and Mubs would be very happy. Did you hear Mubs the other day? I don't know if you were here. Where she said she would rather sit in an office sharpening pencils week after week than have to deal with other people.
Pretty much the only people that I love having around me are my family members.
Mm-hmm. She's not going to say us.
And attractive men. That's it.
Oh, I sort of fall in the category.
That is
so us and your family.
That is all I can tolerate.
Guys, spoiler alert, we're not attractive men.
No, because if you're attractive, then you make me feel better just by looking at you, and chances are high that I will end up sleeping with you as well. So it's a win all around.
Okay, well, I'm not single, but other than that, that's me. So... thanks, Mabali. I haven't met your family. I'm sure they're lovely too, but I'm glad to be in that list.
Oh, man.
Spending time with us.
I'm sure you've dealt with it on Monday and Tuesday, but how was Mozambique?
Oh, it was cool. I've got to say, Mozambique itself, I didn't get to see much of. I was in Maputo. And Maputo is very run down. There is not one building that is not in some way falling apart. It's all exactly as it must have been when the war ended, which was after, you know, that whole period of colonization and Frelimo and all of that stuff. Nothing really has been improved.
I'm just going to go, like, I know, I know the big history.
You don't know about Frelimo? Joaquim Chissano was the president who kind of got things more or less back on track in terms of it being an actual state. But it's, you know what I hate about Africa is that the tour guide, and I say tour guide, he was actually Hugo. He was there to look after us. And Hugo is a native of Maputo, so he knows the place well. And he took us past the president's house. Sorry, the president's office. And this is a huge piece of land that overlooks the Indian Ocean. It's beautiful. It's got the biggest, thickest, fattest, tallest white wall around it. This 21st century building, which looks like it belongs in China or in Los Angeles. It's glass and chrome, and it's just, you know, it's really impressive.
Mm. Well, Los Angeles is actually quite shitty.
Yeah, but, okay, well, like, let's say some fancy,
fancy,
you know, attempts at it. Yeah, it looks like it should be an art gallery.
Yeah, okay.
And then it says the president, what is it? Something La Presidencia or whatever.
Mm.
And you see this opulence and this huge place. And you know, Hugo's showing us, like, this is the president's office. It's a big deal. And then you drive past what they call middle-class people's houses, which in this country we would consider low-cost housing. And then there are the poor, who we went to see how they live because we were spraying for mosquitoes, and they live in just subsistence farming peasant accommodation. Mm. It's like, I mean, you know, you have bricks and those concrete blocks that they build their houses out of, but otherwise you'd be well within your rights to think you were back in 1920, somewhere around there. It's very, very poor, and there are a lot of people who don't have work. And it's a difficult place, I think, to live in. And South Africans go there and they go, oh my God, the beaches are so amazing.
Meanwhile. But the beaches are amazing, aren't they?
They are amazing. I didn't see them, though, because the weather was too bad, and we didn't go to any beaches. We went to the... I did go to the chili farm, which was pretty interesting. They grow chilies there.
Funny name for a place where you grow chilies, Gary.
Oh, thanks.
Stop. I was wondering.
Just making sure that you're aware of it. Because just now you didn't really get the Frelimo, so I was explaining the chili.
Yeah, that much I figured out. What is the actual root of the fuckery? Because they've obviously got...
No, it's just like anywhere else. Government
state captured?
No, governments get it. Well, it's captured by the Chinese, that's for sure. The Chinese are the masters, and everybody else comes with a begging bowl to the Chinese, and they say, fine, I'll fill your begging bowl, but then I want everything else you've got. And you'll be in hock for the next 100 years. And they go, sure, anything to fill my begging bowl. But so it's partly that. It's also that, like in every other tin pot country, you've got a small clique of elite people who run the politics of the nation, who have got in there by winning a popularity contest, and then don't give a damn about the people who voted for them. And why should they? Because the people who voted for them are happy to just carry on with their lives, provided that things don't get worse. And if they do get worse, well, what are we going to do anyway? So that's what happens.
Mm.
I keep saying that the world is changing so fast, and there's so much going on around us, that it won't be long before these governments find themselves unnecessary, uncalled for. People will just go, well, I think we can manage perfectly well without that. Like, we have a minister of sport. We don't need that. There is no reason in the universe other than giving a job to a person who was an ally of yours during the last election campaign. There is no reason to have a minister of sport. They do nothing that cannot be fulfilled by individual sporting bodies getting together and discussing what they need to discuss once a year.
Yeah, take the deputy minister of sport as well.
Both of them.
That's what makes it even worse, is that we don't need ministers, but the deputy minister on top of that.
No. And then you need a director general. I mean, can you imagine anything more ridiculous than being the director general of sport? Sure, in finance. You need a finance director general, you know?
We don't need the whole lot of them. We don't need the ANC, the DA, the EFF, no. We don't need any of them.
No.
They must all go.
Oh, God, I want to hear what you guys think of this quickly. I'm sorry to digress quickly, but I put up a picture of, I don't know, you know, sometimes I think I'm being funny and then I realize, like, either I'm totally out of touch or other people don't think the same things I think are funny are funny.
Well, that happens 9 times out of 10.
It happens all the time, and it kind of makes you not want to do anything, but I put up this picture. Congrats, Amy Winehouse, 5 years sober.
Okay.
I know. I get where it's, you know, it's insensitive, blah blah blah. But it's also really funny because she's.
But if you're in the public eye,
is it too soon to joke about Amy Winehouse? 5 years,
probably not too soon.
So Listen to what this one girl says. I mean, I get like 50 or 60 comments.
Deep offense.
Massive. Just deep. Listen to this. I've got to read this to you because I actually can't believe that this is an adult human being.
Completely outrageous. How dare you?
Here's one. How can someone dying ever be funny? It's things like this that make people so obviously detached and cold. How can one not think of her family and those she left behind and feel sad for them and their loss? Please, they're living off the money she made. Do you remember that family? They were white trash, man. They were living off the money that she made them, and they're still living off that money. The best thing that ever happened to Amy Winehouse's family is her dying. Don't you dare tell me that you know better.
Okay.
How can one not put themselves, oneself, because this is how this person talks, in her family's shoes and think how you would feel if someone posted the same joke about your loved one who passed away? Well, you know what? Probably people will do this when I pass away, and people will, and my family will have to deal with it. Big
also,
deal.
You're in the public eye.
Yeah.
And it's like when you are thrust into the public eye through no doing of your own, and you picked out from, like, you know, obscurity by the internet.
Well, here's another one. Listen to this one. Gareth Cliff, I always thought you were an asshole, but I respected you for your intelligence. Not anymore. You're a fucking idiot. Ooh, should educate yourself further on addiction and how it destroys people's lives. Although I'm not an addict myself, I've suffered pain. Hang on, honey. You don't project all your shit onto me and onto my joke about Amy Winehouse. You may have huge numbers of addicts. Your whole family might be drug-addled. It is nobody else's problem but yours. And don't try to make what is my one post that I was trying to be funny about all about you and your life. How dare you be so solipsistic?
Also, this is a person that's hell of a word. What? Solipsistic. Bloody hell.
Solipsistic. Okay, I'm going to interject here. Why do you want everybody to have the same sense of humor as you? Right. Why can't you just ignore people who get upset with your jokes and accept it for the fact that it's their sensitivity level that got crossed because
she wants me
you have a sensitivity level that gets crossed, and then that's just the way it is.
She wants me to keep it moving. Extremely sensitive to this drug and alcohol problem, because here she says, I'm an ambassador for a charity called Drug and Alcohol Wars. Contact me. I no longer feel like you know everything about everything. I mean, which is so now
that's your shtick. Hang on. That's solipsistic
as hell. She goes, you're being insensitive, and then listen to what she says. Maybe you can use your platform to change lives rather than mocking the death of a talented artist whose music, in fact, changed lives. The basis of econometrics, I think she must have meant econometrics, I don't know if that's a word, is simple. Don't be a dick. You're failing miserably, and your ignorance and arrogance is not helping your cause either. You don't have children, but I hope if you ever do, no one gets to laugh at you losing them.
She's in the public eye. Also, you didn't make that meme. Someone else thought
I'm actually more upset that Gareth actually plagiarizes a lot of memes. I'm just going to throw it out there right now. That is what I find offensive here.
Okay, first of all, being in the public eye doesn't make you some kind of new victim. Get over yourself. And secondly, keep it moving, people. People are going to be upset with the things that you say. Keep it moving, because for you to be outraged over them being outraged is some kind of... Like, get over yourself. Like, not everybody's going to like the same jokes that you do, and when they don't, it doesn't make them idiots. It doesn't make them stupid.
Cause the problem?
Can everybody just get over themselves?
Did the meme play a factor into what happened to her? Was it because people are making memes about this sort of thing that people die of drug and alcoholism?
In any case,
Does the meme create the issue?
And let me tell you something. Amy Winehouse was very proudly drunk all the time. She was proudly on drugs.
That was her thing.
She was not an anti-drug person, so if you've got an anti-drug campaign, you've chosen the wrong ambassador, honey. Because this woman was proud to be on drugs. She loved it, and she had a great life while she was alive. And she took all of the drugs in one day and just didn't wake up.
No, she was solipsistic as hell.
You like that word, huh?
I don't know what it means,
One more time.
Did you guys see this Keaton Jones stuff? The kid with the bully. But did you see the sharp left that whole thing took?
Because they suddenly saw his family had Confederate flags and stuff.
But I mean, I'm so torn about it, because now the kid's just going to become persona non grata all of a sudden because his mother's a dick. I don't think there was anything insincere about his video. I think she's obviously posted it, saw that there was a online reaction, and is now trying to capitalize on that like a dickhead. And like the poor kid is going to get even worse bullied now. Well, Dana White's not going to want to be his friend. UFC champions are not going to want to come hang out with him.
That's why you don't look for justice on social media.
But I think the kid's video was sincere, and I think that he's going to be.
Like I said, I don't care.
People can do two things at the same time. You can feel bad about a kid being bullied because that's just dickery behavior, and you can
think
like,
the mother's a dick.
Yes. You can do two things at the same time. It's allowed.
No, you are right.
But again,
it's allowed.
People are raised badly by parents who didn't put in enough time and effort explaining to them that their feelings are not the most important thing to everyone else on earth. They tell them they're precious little snowflakes and that everyone will cater to their every emotional whim. And they believed it.
No, I don't think this is catering to
No, no, I'm talking about
whim.
This.
I think this kid's going through some horrible shit.
Well, everybody does. It builds character. All right, let's move on. It's time for the news. Here are some headlines that are brought to you by Calcacchio Pizzeria. Some things that you need to know to start your day. First of all, Jacques Beau, who's the guy who wrote The President's Keepers.
Champion, that is.
He's in the news. He has described no further threats of arrest as a great relief after a new investigating officer had been assigned to the case against him. News 24 journalist Peter Louis Myberg has also been pulled into this. Colonel Ruben Govender was on Tuesday reported to have been removed as the investigating officer from a criminal case in which the two authors are suspects. Police informed the lawyer, acting on behalf of the journalist, they would no longer have to report to the Durban North Police Station. So the police, Keystone cops, they don't know what they're doing. In any case, if you're going to arrest Jacques Beau and Peter Louis Myberg about what they've written, shouldn't you also investigate the people they've been writing those things about?
Yeah, Justice Malala, I'm trying to think if it was Thursday or Friday. Thursday, when he came in, he had this wonderful metaphor for a crime scene where, you know, you've got a body there that's been clearly murdered, and then you've got like a bunch of people standing around aghast, going, "Holy shit, someone's been murdered!" And like one person's checking if the guy's still alive, and another person's on the phone calling the police, and the police come and they go, "What are you all doing standing around the stuff?
Yeah.
Like, why are you phoning the police? What are you pointing at? Why are you taking pictures for social media?" And interrogate every single person about why they're there and what their intention is and how very dare they, and then usher them all away and be like, "Thank God we cleared that up."
And leave the bodies right there.
Leave the dead clag on the floor.
All right, here's something else you need to know. Both billionaire businessman Johann Rupert and Western Cape Premier Helen Zille on Tuesday dismissed as fake an email purportedly sent to Rupert by Rupert to Zille ahead of the ANC National Conference, a screenshot of what appears to be an email from jarup50@gmail.com to hzilla01@gmail.com. Dated 11 December, was tweeted by one Musi Amos 1. It reads, "Dear Helen, I'm sure you'd agree that the first few weeks haven't been as tumultuous as the week is going to be. Finally, things are shaping up the way we want them, but we must keep the momentum. The conference is just around the corner, and giving them out riding on its outcome, we must make sure that our boy wins. None of us can afford a contrary result." And then it uses language like this: "His win will ensure that the blacks and their economy remain under our control." I mean, if Johann Rupert wrote that, then he's not even a good Machiavellian.
Yeah, exactly.
If he wrote that, then he's not even good at being like a mastermind behind the scenes.
He probably talked about how who must stay in power for oneself and one's own self. And like, I love it when people have old school Gmail addresses that they clearly signed up either out of desperation,
right?
Either because your name is like Dave Smith, and you're like Dave Smith 001_Johannesburg ZA, or you've got like some completely like bizarre thing like Yellow Porpoise Sunshine Fairy 9006. Because, and then you carry on using this into your like adult life, and while you're in your 30s, you've got like Beerosaurus 9000. And you're mailing people about work.
All right. Something else you need to know. Star Wars starts this week, which is very exciting.
They haven't released like a new last second trailer, and that's killing me. I keep watching the same trailer over and over again.
We're looking for clues. Anyway, it's this week, so you can finally get that itch out of you. And you know that $450 million Leonardo that they sold?
Yes.
Well, guess who bought it?
Oh, my goodness.
Someone was $450 million.
Someone in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
Close.
The Steinhoff Oak.
Close. The Saudi heir, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman.
Yep.
Who's detained thousands of his cousins and tycoons in an anti-corruption drive. He was the mysterious buyer who paid a fortune for a distinctly non-Islamic Leonardo. It's Jesus in the picture. So this guy's a massive art fan. I mean, to the tune of $450 million.
While he casually what? Detains his cousin?
Yeah, but he's trying to clean up because there's huge corruption in Saudi Arabia. And this family, the royal family of Saudi Arabia, is like 1,000 princes, and most of them are just on the take. So he's locked them all in jail. This very fancy jail, it might add, because they're relatives of his. But he's put them in jail, and he's taken them out of the state so that they can't operate their own little fiefdoms. So there we go. If you were wondering who'd bought the Leonardo, there it is, the Saudi heir.
So it opened like a family hotel jail.
Yeah, it's like a family hotel jail. That's exactly what it is. And
so
then
he's probably got like $450,000 lying around because of the money
they're not going to be using that. So
they can't buy QPR and make them Champions League contenders this year.
Let me buy a beautiful painting to reward myself. And lastly, the U.S. brief period of registration-free drone flight is over. Apparently, the National Defense Authorization Act requires the registration of civilian drones, which is similar to what we've got in this country with the Civil Aviation Authority, where you can't actually fly a drone.
This is why there's so many fucking bees at Home Affairs all the time.
You're the only one. All right, let's get to Ben and see what's going on in the sport. Here it is. Do you look at the car of your dreams and instantly think, I can't afford that? Well, thanks to Land Rover Menlyn, this doesn't have to be the case. Get into a new Range Rover Sport today and only start paying for it in March of next year. This unique payment holiday is really a dream deal, so head on over to menlyn.landrover.co.za to make it a reality. Or give them a call on Pretoria 369-2400. That's Pretoria 369-2400 to arrange a test drive. 012-369-2400. Better yet, head on down to the new improved Land Rover Menlyn dealership. It's located at 221 Gasfontein Road, just off the N1 highway in Menlyn. Ben, what do you got for us?
Sport, Gareth. I've got sport.
Yes, what kind?
What are the two greatest properties in SA rugby right now?
Well, Ben, you and Gord were at Sevens. I would say that's up there.
Blitzbox, yeah, Blitzbox. Correct. And?
Wade Fennekerk. Oh, that's not rugby. I thought you said sport.
No, it was rugby. Rugby that claimed his knee and potentially his career, but no, wrong answer.
What?
Varsity Cup rugby.
Oh, Varsity
Cup. It's massively positive. There's a huge backing towards it, huge crowds. What do they both have in common?
They are not fucked with by Saru.
The Oaks that play it bone really hot chicks.
Sometimes I just think you guys don't care. You
know, they both use rugby
some
ball.
Of their They're girlfriends. They're both heavily sponsored by Steinhoff. Steinhoff are the financial force behind... Well, Steinhoff's the title sponsor of the Blitzbox, and it is the Steinhoff Varsity Cup. So Saru are... I mean, these guys, they know what a shitstorm is. They really do. They've stopped naming them. They just go, oh, look, there, another one. So they're now consulting with Steinhoff to say, like, well, what's the path ahead? No one knows yet, because obviously... No one knows really what the full extent of the whole Steinhoff thing is. But just imagine you're a person that's taking the Steinhoff money and you're thinking, this is so great. There's this like really amazing company.
Someone who cares.
He's got so much money and they're putting it back in rugby. It's great. And like a month ago, we all had gone, yeah, see Steinhoff. That's a progressive brand. Look how great it is. Varsity Cup, Sevens, all deals. It's amazing. And now you're thinking, ah, shit.
I noticed in the player profile stuff, and I didn't have anything to do with it this year because I've worked on quite a lot of those graphics and stuff that take place during the stadium and in the pre-build-up. But I noticed when they would put players on the big screen with a bit of a profile about them, they cropped them just above the logo. And I don't know whether that's complete coincidence or if it's a deliberate thing.
Well, you got to think of it. Steinhoff is still operating, right?
Yes.
They haven't been knocked out. So if they've paid money to sponsor something, then they're entitled to keep the sponsorship going.
Yeah.
And Saru have signed stuff saying you are title sponsors, so they've got to honor an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So people can jump up and down and bitch and moan about the fact that Steinhoff are this and that, but they've paid to sponsor things.
Yeah. Right.
But at the same time, it really sullies the good nature of...
You could still be like the Harvey Weinstein Springboks. Until he can't afford to pay the bill anymore, you have to stay there.
It's like the Weinsteins. And they'll be taking on the Harvey Weinstein massage parlor Springboks this Saturday. We wish we couldn't say that, but they signed a 3-year deal.
Yeah, and they're still paying. Until they stop paying, we're contractually obliged. The Weinsteins have to run out against the All Blacks on Saturday.
All right, good. Shut up now, Gord. For God's sake, let Ben get on with the sport.
Yeah, in slightly more positive rugby news, last night was the inaugural... Gord's laughing. Gord just needs himself today. He really does.
Turn off his mic. Get out of this.
The inaugural Bright Rock Players' Choice Awards took place last night. This is a slightly more positive story because it was about celebrating what's going on in SA Rugby and the good things, that is. So... Defender of the Year was Malcolm Marks, Forward of the Year was Sio Kolisi, Backline Player of the Year was Roscoe Speckman from the Steinhoff Blitzbox. Best off the bench was Stephen Kitsoff, so good that he probably should start more. And the Fans' Choice Award was Francois Fenter, mostly because I think Bloemfontein teenage girls were all over that thing. And then Players' Player of the Year was Sio Kolisi, so Sio Kolisi the big winner there for that night.
No, shut up, Gord.
Yeah. In other rugby news, it's been confirmed the rugby championship fixtures for next year, 2018. The Boks will take on Argentina August 18th in Durban. So if you like a bit of a draw, August 18th. Boks should win that one too. So Kings Park, 18th of August. The weather's always nice. It's really, really nice. Australia versus the Springboks, they'll be in Brisbane. Then the Boks will be taking on New Zealand in Wellington. And then at home, the Boks will be taking on Australia in PE.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll be toasting New Zealand at Loftus, which is a cuck idea.
Tell me why.
Well, firstly, the All Blacks hammer the Boks at Loftus. That's just what they do. They hammer them. Secondly, Loftus is just not a great place to go for Bok rugby. It just really isn't. It hasn't been for so long. You go there, it's dreadful. The Oost Pavilion, because, I mean, the Oost Pavilion, at least you know where you are with the Oost Pavilion, because it's rough and stuff. But when you got to pay like $800 a ticket, the Oost Pavilion becomes extra violent, because now you got as a grudge purchase of note. So now they're drinking extra cheap brandy to try balance the equation, and it gets rough there.
And you can't even refer to it as the East Pavilion. It's like it is the Oost Pavilion.
No, it's not the East Pavilion. That's a pavilion on the east side of something. At Loftus, there's the Oost Pavilion.
That's a place. It's an event.
Trademarked. It's like the cop at Anfield.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's the Oost Pavilion. So that's what I look forward to, Bok fans. But the incoming series of 2018 is England versus SA. So 9th of June, if you're wondering why your ground is not included with Bok matches, 9th of June, Ellis Park, Johannesburg. They'll be against England. 16th of June, Free State Stadium, Bloemfontein. And then 23rd of June, Newlands in Cape Town. Can we please move away from Newlands now? That's done. Cape Town Stadium. Let's get it going.
Okay.
Right, yes, so when the Blitzbox run out at Cape Town Stadium, it is an absolute hell of a thing during the Sevens. Like, I've been to Proteas games and Springbok games, and when things are going well, it's like a Muravichius. But when, I mean, for every other game, the stadium's half full and people are drinking outside. But when the Blitzbox run out, it is like some other thing. Honestly, it's mind-blowing, and it makes you feel pretty, pretty stoked.
Yeah, it really did. Tonight and tomorrow is the Ramslam T20 semi-finals. Weather depending, of course, because at this time of year, most games north of, well, Beaufort West are basically full of rain. Let's just play every game in Cape Town. So a lot of these could be hindered, unfortunately. Tonight, the Titans, who are the best team in the whole country, they'll take on the Warriors, 6 o'clock. And then tomorrow, the Hollywood Bets Dolphins. See, that's like the Weinstein massage parlor. We'll take on the Cape Cobras. So that'll be at 6. Now, it rains every day in Durban when the cricket match runs. So yes. Expect rain
every
there.
Time.
So they'll probably have a coin toss to decide who goes through the finals to play the Titans. That's your Ramslam. But tomorrow, about 22 hours' time, the third test. This is the clincher for Australia. Australia versus England, the Ashes third test in Perth. It's going to be a fast pitch. And, it's kind of lost pace over the years, but the Aussie bowlers are still mean and fast enough to really make it quite venomous. And the English, well, they'll whimper to another loss, which will mean 3-0, which will mean the end of the series. And finally, Tyson Fury is going to box again. I know he's been saying that for quite some time, mostly because he's been coming off a massive coke binge for so long, but he's been saying all kinds of crazy things. But this time he actually means it, and this time he can legally get it done. So he's currently 29, although he looks about 40, but most carnies are. And he believes he can still get back in there. I don't know. Yeah. That's it for your sport today. We have lots of other football.
Ben
to
ran
get
out
into.
Of steam there in that last little bit. He just went.
Yeah, I did. I was going to tell you about the Premier League as well because that happened last night. But actually, who cares? Man City are going to win.
Meh.
They so are going to win. It's depressing as hell, but there's really they are absolutely. I mean, just good luck catching that.
Well, exactly. Catching that, it's there's something happening there. That's
right, these Ben, you said you'd be giving us Bitcoin and Ethereum prices every morning because this is a new thing. And I know lots of people. We had a run-in yesterday. You missed him being here. But it was a great day yesterday for Ethereum, Ben.
It was, Gareth.
How did you do?
So I put a meager 500 RONT on Ethereum on Monday. It is now worth 673 RONT.
Nice, huh?
Yeah, look at that. That's a cool conversion.
Too bad.
So
a RONT.
So, and Ethereum.
Say RONT.
So, I mean, like, what do you call it? You know, obviously, a Bitcoin is worth it. Is an Ethereum.
One Ethereum, $614.2.
Okay, so you're doing it now.
Well, I mean, do you want to do it in rands? Because that's what you usually do.
Yes.
Okay, go for it.
9,405 RAND. Okay. No, but I mean, like what is
and
the
a Bitcoin?
But what is the unit that we specify?
An Ethereum.
Yeah. Bitcoin has come down 257,000 RAND, 857.
That's a lot of money.
Even the hardy does are like,
those hardy does.
They're obviously into it. I said when I was on the show, I don't know if it was Friday or Thursday, I was like, in Bitcoin news, Bitcoin has now moved to second on the list of things you have to talk about if you're into them, just behind veganism, just above now atheism, CrossFit.
Yeah.
Ever watched Game of Thrones.
But guys, like I was thinking when I was driving down to Cape Town last week, is that when you listen to crappy old radio and they go, and the gold price today is, it's like, who actually really cares? Who owns gold? No one.
Pirates.
Who owns cryptocurrency? A lot of people. So why the hell do people not have Bitcoin and Ethereum prices?
Don't tell them that. Then radio get all the good ideas from us. Don't give them
anymore. Take it anyway. Time to reinforce our shit, though. They're going to take it anyway.
Okay, it's time for Said by Sia. But just before that, let me remind you that if you haven't tried Touch Base Pro, let's say you've got a newsletter in your business that you send out to all your clients. Maybe you send it to your suppliers. Maybe you send it to your staff. Newsletters can be improved with Touch Base Pro. You book a demo with them. Just go to touchbasepro.com and click on Book a Demo. They will show you how to use the system. You can share the screen, and they will give you a tutorial. 20 minutes is all it takes to see how easy it is to use. There's no commitment from you, and the demo is tailored to you and your company needs. You hear, even the hardy does are impressed.
Jeez.
I hate those goddamn birds. All right, let's move on. Sia, it's Said by Sia time.
Yay. Okay, well, I personally like that one of my unconventional roles here is to just go through my day and find things that are happy and bring them to you every single morning. So
nice.
Actually, yeah, I think it's pretty cool. So while I was doing that in the way that I usually do it, which is, you know, listening to TED Talks, I was listening to one the other day and I thought, oh, this is actually kind of cool. So I thought, let me find some of my favorite TED Talks and compile them in a bit of a list. And so here are the five best TED Talks, in my humble opinion, that'll inspire you to do just that, just to be happier and live your best life. All right, so number one is Dan Gilbert. He spoke about the surprising science of happiness. So if you tend to think that getting certain things, like, you know, if I just get a new car or if I just, you know, buy a new house and accomplishments will make you happy, this talk might actually change your mind. His name is Dan Gilbert, and he talks about our psychological immune system, which surprisingly helps us stay happy even when what we thought should happen doesn't. Number two, Matt Killingsworth, he discusses want to be happy, well, stay in the moment. So using data that he gathered from thousands of people, Matt Killingsworth found that we are happiest when we get lost in experiencing the present moment we're in, instead of letting our minds wander to another time,
I've got to learn from him because that's something I need to learn to do.
It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. Number three of the top five best TED Talks which can make you happier or are about happiness is by Brené Brown, and she discusses the power of vulnerability. Now, this is one of my personal favorites. She's even
even written a book about this as well, and like it's been viewed over 18 million times on YouTube. But Brené Brown, I think she's funny, she's very honest, and she's personal in this talk, and she opens our minds to some of the absolute core human emotions, things like courage, things like connection, things like fear and love, in ways that if you really listen with, you know, an open heart and an open mind, I think you can just change how you think about being happier and living a better life as well. And then one which I find absolutely touching and just reminds us about what's really important in life is by a speaker by the name of Tanya Lunia, and her talk is titled How a Penny Made Me Feel Like a Millionaire. Now, she discusses leaving her home in post-Chernobyl Ukraine, like could things actually get any worse, to taking asylum in the United States. But more than just, you know, more than just being this touching story, her talk is all about reminding us to pay more attention to the tiny simple joys that can fill our days, and really more than that is just also reminding us not to take things for granted. So I like hers as well. And then rounding off the top five best TED Talks that are about happiness and could possibly make you feel happier is by a man named Daniel Kahneman. Now
he's great. I've read his book called Thinking Fast and Slow.
Yes, there we go. So he's a Nobel laureate. He's a founder of behavioral economics, and it's a lot to process, but it's a lot of amazing research as well. And he's one of the prominent psychologists in the world. Now, there are dozens of gems in this talk, but for me, the one that I found that made most impact is about how we have, he terms, our experiencing selves and also our remembering selves, mm-hmm. and how both of these perceive happiness differently. I've listened to it over and over again, and I advise you do the same as well. And each time I listen, there's new things that I take from the talk, and you know, there are specific ways in which I'm affected. So I think if you just take, you know, a few minutes in your day, you listen to these, you watch these videos, and hopefully you'll feel a bit better.
Isn't it cool that now you don't have to actually be at the TED Talk to hear it? And you don't have to be in the studio with us to hear a conversation. And you know, the internet is great. You could just go on there and find whatever you want. You type in, you're interested in, I don't know, the taste of aloe juice.
Yeah.
And you'll find some dude somewhere has written a blog, or he's done a podcast or something on the taste of aloe juice. And it's just incredible how people are able to, first of all, create all this content. And second of all, find the content you care about. It's great. It's lovely.
Yeah.
And use it ultimately for good, hopefully.
Yeah. I love the bit about the penny making the lady feel like a millionaire, because I've always got this, like theory that I get into quite often, where I say 90 to 95% of the things that cause you suffering or anger or misery are purely a matter of perception. You can choose how to see those things. You can decide whether they're a problem. You can decide how pissed off or angry or how badly it affects you, or literally brush it off. Some things are easier to brush off than others, but 90 to 95% of the shit in your life is brush off a bill. The 5 to 10% that's not, that's going to come and it's going to fuck you in the knee. So because 5 to 10% of the time, shit things are going to happen, are going to ruin your day or make you genuinely sad or make you feel pissed off or hurt. Rather choose not to suffer the other 90%, since bad shit will happen and people you love eventually will die. So just loss the rest as best you can. Make that a discipline that you practice and work at.
Right.
That's my advice.
Simple. There we go. Should I play your music?
Play my pontificating music.
Whenever Gord gets on his... But that wasn't a pontification. I actually thought that was very nice.
It was
so pretty.
Thanks, Go.
But what the hell? We'll play the pontification music anyway.
We'll save it for the next time. I'll pontificate eventually.
You think?
Yeah, it's coming.
Right, I'll save it.
Thanks.
Okay, it's almost 7 o'clock. We're going to get into some news with Mubs in the next little while. And we'll meet Michael and Kinga from Kolkakios, who are really fun people. We spent some time with them yesterday. I had to take out the trash. I had to actually take out the garbage.
We'll have to get into that.
See, I had to do a stock take. All the jobs that we were innocently talking about, the things that we would least like to do the other day. Remember, Mubs and I said the worst job for me would be a garbage man, and you said the worst job for you would be a waitress.
Well, service industry in its entirety.
And Thea said he'd hate to be a stock taker.
and like, people, and your job is to be nice to them yeah. all, regardless of whether they're dicks.
All right.
And few of them are attractive.
We'll get into that in a second. Hopefully you're having a good start to your day. Now, have you heard this, what is this song? This 12 Days of Christmas that's just been done by...
Is the South African version
yes.
of it?
Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean.
Uh-huh.
Who is it again?
It is, I assume, someone from Cape Town.
Yeah, man. Black Motion are involved.
Oh, are really?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh, we like those guys.
We like them a lot. It's Good Luck and Black Motion.
Okay.
So very cool. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah,
just
let's
in case.
Do it.
All right, so here it is, just for you. Oh, that's Ben's theme music. That's not the 12 Days of Christmas. But I thought also because it's coming to that time of year, you know, everybody's getting into the spirit. And we will have Sia sing 5 seconds of a Christmas song just now and spoil it for everyone.
Getting into the spirits of Christmas.
There we go. That's my buddy's job, the spirits of Christmas. All right, take a listen to this. Good luck with Black Motion, 12 Days of Christmas. Nice.
This is CliffCentral.com.